Hi everyone, it's Grace, your regular host for the podcast, and today I'm here to bring you a new spin-off series from the Story Embers podcast. We're so excited to introduce Michael Stanton, a writer and freelance creative producer, as the host of Stories by the Embers, an experimental series of bonus podcast episodes. In each episode, Michael performs a professional dramatic reading of one of our past short stories from the SE site and interviews the author to get a behind-the-scenes look at the process behind the story. Our hope is that seeing an example of a well-constructed story and hearing how the author put it together will better help you learn how to do the same. But we want your feedback. After listening to this episode, email us at info@storyembers.org to let us know what you think. We're only doing a couple of these stories and interviews as an experiment, so if you want this bonus series to become a permanent addition to the podcast alongside our monthly conversations, you need to let us know. With that, I'll hand things over to Michael for our first episode of Stories by the Embers.
You're listening to Stories by the Embers, a Story Embers podcast spinoff where I read short stories and other works for your enjoyment. And then I interview the authors to learn what it was that first sparked the idea and how they forged it into what we see today. It's a chance to see into someone else's creative process to help you develop yours. I'm your host and narrator, Michael Stanton. Today's story is by Story Embers' own editor-in-chief, Josiah DeGraff, and it launches us into a thrilling escapade of a cunning heretic and shapeshifter who tries to do the right and honorable thing, but just seems to land himself in more and more trouble. I found the twists and turns in this story, as well as the quirkiness of the hero, a lot of fun to read. But more importantly, the questions and struggles the story asked, they just grip me. And I think you'll see what I mean. Here is A Heretic's Sacrifice by Josiah DeGraff. Emiel was twice a heretic. When he rejected the 12 gods for Adelson, the church labeled him a heretic. And when he held on to the 12 gods' powers after pledging himself to Adelson, even his fellow heretics called him a heretic. The numerous enemies Emiel had gathered over the years caused many near-death experiences. But he didn't mind. Enemies made escapades more fun. Emiel landed softly on the cold stone floor, his rope dangling beside him. He scanned the area. No guards this time of night. He stretched. Kessian always said he stretched like a cat. He was never quite sure whether she meant it as a compliment or not. His back cracked. He grimaced. Hiding above the chapel's rafters for 7 hours had stiffened all his joints. Oren had suggested that he disguise himself as part of the wall. Unfortunately, Emil's shape-shifting powers didn't work that way. Emil padded along the stone floor toward the exit. A chill crept through his socks. He probably should have worn shoes, but shoes were so unnatural. How could he stay on his toes if he couldn't feel the surface he was standing on? He arrived at twin doors adorned with fancy carvings intended to honor the 12 gods. As if the 12 gods gave a rat's tail for the happenings on Earth. Emil considered finding a knife to make some interesting changes to the carvings, but he wasn't sure Adelson approved vandalism, even if he would be defacing false deities. And Emil had a job to do. He pushed the doors open and tiptoed into the main hall of the manor. No guards in sight. Perfect. Emil slipped down through the hallway, winding the directions he'd memorized through his head. Turn right at the frayed tapestry. Go straight past the double doors, avoid being distracted by the gorgeous artwork in the entry hall, and descend the spiral stairs. Then fandangle his way past a couple of guards, obtain the key, and get the goods. Emil turned at the tapestry and emerged in the upper part of the entry hall. Double stairs extended into the foyer below, where an immense painting of the great creation of the Twelve hung above three doors leading to the rest of the mountain city. Emil blinked. So idolatrous. So beautiful. The Damien-era framing of the scene was breathtaking. People didn't produce masterpieces like that anymore. Emil forced himself to move on and ducked into the spiral staircase. He eyed the rough walls as he descended. No attempts to conceal the uncut stone here. As rumored, parts of the manor tunneled deep into the mountain. The staircase exceeded the length Emil thought was reasonable for a treasury. How had they recruited the manpower to excavate the stone? A god blessed? But Fellner took pride in being one of the rare free cities that hadn't been conquered by a god blessed yet. How ironic if their manor had been built by one. More likely, the staircase had been constructed by slaves. Thank goodness for free cities. After Emil had huffed and puffed down countless stairs, torchlight glimmered ahead. He'd be in view of the guards any moment. He rubbed his palms together. He knew exactly who he wanted to masquerade as. The high-nosed, pale-skinned guard he'd seen earlier. Emil didn't like innocent people to get blamed for mischief he committed while impersonating them. But a jerk? That was a different matter entirely. Emil concentrated on his memory of the man's appearance as he rounded the corner. The two guards blocking the treasury door spotted him immediately. His head began to ache. Cloaking himself was easy with only two people for an audience, but it did take a toll.
"If you would step aside for a moment,"
Emil said, trying to imitate the guard's snooty voice. His blessing allowed him to change how others saw his appearance, but unfortunately didn't affect his voice. He cleared his throat.
"Lord Arryn wanted me to..."
One of the guards stepped into the light, and Emil stared into the dumbfounded face of the man he was replicating.
"Oh. Well, it was worth a shot," Emil muttered.
He grabbed the pike from the quivering hand of the snooty man's comrade. The snooty man opened his mouth.
"Stop!"
Emil rammed the butt of the pike into his gut. What a dimwit. The other guard reached for his horn, but Emil kicked him. He was good at kicking, except when he struck metal-plated greaves instead of bare shins. His right foot blossomed in pain. The guard pressed the horn to his lips. Emil pounced, bashing his skull against both the horn and the guard's nose. The man toppled as he fumbled with his horn. Emil threw a punch and knocked him out cold. Emil slowly brushed himself off.
"This is why you shouldn't let crazy men steal spears from you."
He quickly fished around for the keys, then unlocked the door to the treasury. He scampered inside and untied the bag from around his waist. The Lord had so many excess coins that surely he wouldn't mind if Emil permanently borrowed a couple. He filled his bag and slung it over his shoulder with a smirk. Orin had warned him that the heist might be dangerous, but Orin had failed to count on his courage and wit. Sneaking out would be a cinch. He spun the key ring around his fingers as he exited the treasury. The horn blared. Emil whirled. The guard, still looking dazed, was blowing the horn so hard that his face reddened. All for some misplaced coins. Emil snarled and ran up the stairs. They probably made the staircase annoyingly long to hinder escape. Footsteps pounded above. Emil swallowed. A normal man would be trapped, but he wasn't a normal man. The snooty guard would be the perfect disguise. He conjured up the image as he rounded a corner and collided with a group of guards. Emil gasped and pointed downward.
"The blonde thief nearly killed me."
He adjusted his appearance so that the blood oozed from his chest.
"I barely escaped with my life."
Projecting an illusion into the minds of six men intensified his headache. He clutched his chest and pressed himself and the bag against the wall to give the guards room. The lead guard drew his sword.
"Can you get to the infirmary?"
Emil nodded quickly.
"Go, stop him."
"We will," the lead guard said. The group galloped down the stairs to capture the imaginary thief. Emil blinked as the headache faded.
"So long, idiots."
He'd sounded nothing like the snooty guard, and why would they believe a man fleeing from the crime scene? Fortunately, when officials continually proclaimed that God-blessed couldn't enter the city, people believed it and didn't think to question peculiarities. Emil finished ascending the stairs and sped toward the entry hall. The bag of coins bounced and jingled on his back. If anyone was watching, the racket would be suspicious for a solitary guard. Perhaps he could say he had lots of change in his pockets. But guards had no pockets. The stout merchant he'd seen setting up for market would have ample space for pockets. A merchant wouldn't be scuttling around a palace during a theft unless he was guilty, though. And Emil didn't like to incriminate innocent people. A trio of guards burst out of a side corridor while Emil was still debating. Their mouths dropped open. Shoot! Too late to retract the questionable disguise.
"What are you?"
a guard sputtered.
"Bye."
Emil took off far faster than a stout merchant should be able to maneuver. The heavy bag of coins thumped against his back. The guards tore after him. Emil emerged in the balcony overlooking the entry hall, the magnificent Great Creation painting. Perhaps another day he'd return to steal it. That thievery would be harder to justify than the coins, though, especially with the idolatry. Emil hopped on the banister and slid down, watching the steps whiz by below him. The guards weren't armed with any ranged weapons and couldn't shoot him, but they could yell. Emil remembered why he was supposed to bypass the entry hall, because guards were stationed by the doors. As the door swung open, Emil resolved on his new appearance. Revealing his ability to change form was risky, but better than being caught. The guards sprang in from outside to get a once-in-a-lifetime glimpse at Lord Arryn gliding down the banister and leaping onto the floor with a loud jangle.
"It's a coup!"
Emil yelled as he gestured toward the bewildered guards above, who had just witnessed a merchant transforming into their lord.
"Stop them!"
Amid the confusion trailing behind him, Emil slid between the guards, out the doors, and into the darkness of the urban mountainside. Emil heaved the bag onto the sturdy wooden table.
"Look who snatched Arryn's finest."
Orin sifted through the coins in the bag. His black beard cast strange and amusing shadows across his face in the dim candlelight of the kitchen.
"Did you run into any trouble?"
"Don't I always?" Emil rubbed his eyes. "I never get caught, but they know a shapeshifter stole their treasure, which destroys the myth that all the god-blessed are afraid of Felmer. They never saw me in my true form, though."
"Does anyone?"
Orin's voice was gravelly, like stones falling over stones in an avalanche. He looked up at Emil. Emil's head pounded. Perhaps he should let Orin see his true form. Or not.
"Do I look like the sort of man who wants to have someone else's death on my hands? If you're ever exposed, you'd be thankful to deny knowing my identity."
"Or to trust a man you don't know?"
"You're still taking my coins."
Orin snorted.
"You don't need to trust someone for that."
"No."
Emil spread the coins out on the table.
"Which is why you don't need to know who I really am."
"If you insist."
Orin leaned one arm on the table and scrutinized the coins.
"How would you like us to distribute this?"
Emil shrugged.
"You're more familiar with the community's needs than me. Bless the people who need it most."
"You're not going to help? We must dispose of the coins fast."
"Don't you have two teenage boys to help you?"
Emil chewed on his lip.
I may or may not have accidentally copied the appearance of a local merchant during the theft. The guards may suspect him, and I can't let someone die because of me. I need to find him tomorrow."
Orin gaped at him.
"You shapeshifted into whom?"
"It's a long story that would bore you,
but I need to get this merchant out of Felnir before Arryn's men arrest him.
How? Do you know this merchant?
Emil shook his head. Never talked with him, actually. He was just memorable because of his chubbiness. Orin rolled his eyes.
I forgot I'm dealing with a kid.
I'm an adult.
Barely, from the looks of you.
You don't know what I look like. Orin didn't respond. He just stared at the table. Some people had odd habits. Emil contemplated how he'd locate the merchant. He'd have to wander around the marketplace, which wouldn't be the most efficient tactic to outmaneuver the guards. He'd hatch a plan. He always did. Orin tapped his hairy fist against the table.
You surprised me, Emil.
Emil turned back to him. What?
Mistakes aside, you did rob Arryn successfully. I doubted you. I was wrong.
Orin crossed his arms over his broad chest.
Have you ever considered using your talents more effectively?
What do you mean?
Orin stroked his beard.
Stealing tax money and saving people from nobles is admirable work, but if you can rob the governor, you could launch a coup and lift our oppression instead of patching up a flawed system.
Emil dug his right foot into the ground. People were never satisfied with one caper. Once they saw his craftiness and daunting persona, they always wanted more.
It's not that simple. Listen.
Orin looked straight into Emil's eyes.
You, me, and a couple of my friends could start a revolution.
He gestured toward the coins.
Give the people of Felnir more than the occasional treat.
Emil shook his head. I told you that I don't stay in one place long.
You've been in Felnir a month and a half.
Which is already too long, Emil said. I need to travel. Find another place where I can do good. Especially now that Arryn realizes there's a shapeshifter in town.
You can do good here.
Emil shook his head, finished pouring the coins out of the bag, and draped the burlap over his shoulder. Too much risk. People obsess over big, dramatic feats like overthrowing kingdoms and rulers. But when all is said and done, one tyrant just replaces another. Orin sighed in resignation. Emil picked up a coin. Small kindnesses are what causes change. Relieving a starving widow or cheering up a penniless child means more than a fancy official proclamation. He glanced out the window. The sun would be rising in a few hours. I need to go. He walked to the door and bowed briefly to his friend. Orin and his family were good people, although a tad idealistic. But they were essential for him to help the people of Felnir. Orin shook his head.
Have a blessed evening.
Emil hurried through Felnir's crowded streets. The early morning sun filtered through the ridges surrounding the mountaintop city. Emil narrowly avoided getting his bare feet crushed by all the heavy shoes around him. Why couldn't walking barefoot be a national pastime? And where was the unfortunate merchant?
Excuse me, passing through,
he called as he wove through the tight cluster of market customers. His head ached from maintaining an illusion to shroud his turquoise eyes from hundreds of people. He couldn't cloak his appearance in a crowd, but he had to hide the telltale trait of a god-blessed. Why did the blasted gods instill their gifts with frustrating limitations? An executioner's block had been erected in the town square. On a market day? Emil shook his head. What a twisted sense of entertainment. Better to have unusual entertainment. He paused in front of the platform. He had been hunting for half an hour without success. The guards couldn't have found the merchants that quickly, could they? He bit the inside of his cheek.
Hey, Adolsen. I haven't talked to you as much as I should, but, I need help. An innocent man may be in trouble, and you're the protector of the innocent, right? Well, I sure could use some help to be your effective instrument here. If you could help me find this merchant before the authorities, he and I would greatly appreciate it. Emil blinked and resumed searching. Edelson didn't always answer prayers promptly, but he needed to allow some time between himself and a guard. Two guards marched by, hoisting their silver-tipped pikes. Emil smirked. The people of Fellner had so many ridiculous superstitions. He was tempted to reach out and touch one of the blades to prove that God-blessed were not repelled by silver. Lord Arryn swore that his guards and security measures steered God-blessed away from Fellner. Emil knew the truth. Nobody cared about a small, isolated city on the outskirts of Morshan. That was prone to volcanic eruptions and earthquakes, including God-blessed. Except for weird ones like himself. As the guards moved on, Emil decided on a new tactic. Puffing himself up with an air of confidence, he approached a merchant's booth and leaned on the counter. "Hey, companion." The merchant's bushy eyebrows merged with a frown.
"Who are you?"
"Doesn't matter," Emil said. "I was just wondering if you know a rotund merchant who was selling his wares yesterday. Wore a fancy green cloak and looked important."
"No."
"How rude. Thanks for the encouragement and support, friend." Emil sidestepped to the next stall and made eye contact with the new merchant. "Excuse me."
"Back off, I didn't know him."
Emil opened his mouth to unleash a sarcastic remark, then snapped it shut. That was an odd use of past tense.
"You didn't know him?"
"I know what you're up to."
The merchant lowered his voice and leaned toward Emil.
"One of your buddies came by earlier and interrogated us. You tell Arryn we don't know anything about this God-blessed's activities or how he infiltrated the city."
Emil blinked. "Tell Arryn?
Or whatever guard hired you. Word of advice, if you're fishing for information, don't be so obvious. None of us helped him. Just be content that you managed to catch a shapeshifter."
"Catch a shapeshifter? But... oh." Emil burst into the woodcarver's workshop as he finalized his altered appearance.
"I need some of those coins I delivered last night."
The breeze sent the dust flying through the air, and a scent of pine filled his nose. Orin stopped chiseling a chair leg and glanced around, but no one else was in the shop.
"What's wrong?"
His deep voice boomed. Emil panted.
"They've caught the merchant."
"The merchant?"
Emil fumbled for words.
"Yeah, you know. The one I accidentally impersonated in the palace. They think he's the shapeshifter."
Orin inhaled.
"Latch the door behind you."
Emil hurriedly complied. His movement stirred more dust and he sneezed. Orin slowly laid his knife beside the wood shavings on his workbench.
"Are you certain about this?"
"I think they caught him last night. The other merchants are scared stiff. I need some of those coins."
"For what?"
"A bribe."
Orin tapped his finger against the wood for a moment. Emil cocked his head. "Why the delay?" Orin looked up.
"You realize this could be a feint."
"A feint?"
"A trick to draw you out. Why would they assume the merchant was the perpetrator rather than a victim, unless they're using him as bait?"
Emil shrugged.
"If he's bait, they win. I won't let an innocent bystander die on my account."
"Do you know they'll kill him?"
Emil hated when people treated him like a kid. Just because his brain wasn't screwed on straight didn't mean he had the naivety of a youth.
"Listen. Fellner's citizens gloat over the fact that a God-blessed has never conquered their city. Of course, they'll publicly execute him, turquoise eyes or not."
"Unless they know he's fake and this is a feint."
"They don't know my true form or how my powers work. Since most of the guards saw the plump merchant first, that's the face they'll associate with the shapeshifter.
People aren't used to dealing with beings who can radically change their appearance. Oren pursed his lips.
I'm not persuaded.
Emil threw up his hands. This is why he had trust issues. People took stuff he gave them and never reciprocated the favor.
Look, I don't know their plans, but I can't risk him dying because of me.
Fine. Assume they'll kill him. How will you free him?
Emil rolled his eyes.
I'll shapeshift.
And get spotted like last night?
They believe they have the shapeshifter. They won't be prepared for another.
Oren scratched his beard.
Is one merchant worth endangering your life for? If you're captured, think how many people you won't be able to save.
An innocent man might die because of my mistake.
You're being a fool.
I didn't ask your opinion. I hear enough insults elsewhere, thank you very much. I came because bribes aren't cheap, and I have a right to some of my spoil.
Oren fell silent again before speaking.
I don't like equipping youth to make rash decisions.
I dislike helping someone who won't help me in return.
You could save more than one merchant if you remain in the city with us.
Do you think I'd continue helping you if you won't help me when I need it?
Oren picked up a tool and chipped at the chair leg, grumbling to himself. The corners of Emil's mouth twitch.
Ha, trapped you.
You will be careful if I relinquish the money, right?
Oren asked without pausing his motions.
Would I want to die?
Oren sighed.
I suppose you have a point. It is your rightful spoil anyway.
He tugged at his beard, probably still looking for an excuse to deny Emil's request. But eventually, even stubborn men have to admit they've been beaten. Oren set down his knife.
All right, follow me.
Emil hefted the last barrel higher on his shoulder as he hauled it down the stairs to Oren's wine cellar. He had persuaded a servant to hand over his job unloading wagons in exchange for 3 months' wages. He hadn't mentioned that he would be borrowing the man's appearance as well. Emil lowered the barrel and rubbed his shoulder. His job was beginning to feel repetitive and boring. He'd invaded the same place 2 nights in a row, with virtually the same plan. Find the dungeon, surprise the guards, grab the keys, free the man, and run. But this time, he'd make sure the guards stayed unconscious. All that was left was to choose a person to replicate. One of the shock guards from the previous night would work, as long as he didn't run into his doppelganger again. He fixated on his memory of the man's face as he climbed the cellar stairs. Emil stepped into a hall in the lower level of the manor. The flicker of torches was the only movement. Perfect. According to the directions he'd bribed from the servant, he had to travel 2 doors down, then turn left. The servant probably thought he'd gotten the deal of his life. His master would disagree after Emil accomplished his mission. Emil veered left and glimpsed the line of cells through the open door. Most dungeon entrances were kept locked. Odd. Did Oren want someone to find the dungeon? Was he walking into a trap? A scream ricocheted off the walls. Emil hesitated briefly. But trap or no trap, he had a duty to this merchant. He strode down the corridor and gripped the knife strapped to his belt. The hall cells jutted left, and Emil peered around the corner. The merchant was chained to the wall, with a silver pike impaling his arm. Lord Oren and 4 guards surrounded him, silhouetted by a crackling furnace.
Yes, scream. Let the silver poison your blood.
Lord Oren hissed.
But screaming won't tell me where my coins are.
Emil swallowed. Such ridiculous superstitions about silver. Such horrible torture for an innocent man.
I swear, I'm not one of them,
the merchant cried.
I told the guards to look at my eyes.
As if a shapeshifter's eyes matter.
How do you know the god blessed didn't impersonate me?
Emil's ears perked up.
A shapeshifter wouldn't pick such a preposterous disguise unless it was his actual form.
Or the shapeshifter is an idiot. Emil stepped back and pressed himself against the wall. His stomach churned. Vomit would be an improvement to the dungeon floor. He swallowed. An innocent man was being tortured for his mistake, and he needed to stop it.
Please,
the merchant begged. Emil blinked. He couldn't overpower 5 men at once. Not even with deception. He wasn't that skilled at fighting. 2 opponents were his max.
Give me another pike,
Lord Arryn said.
Adelson, grant me strength. Don't let this man die because of me.
Emil glanced around the corner as Arryn raised the pike above the merchant's right hand. His stomach lurched. He needed to reveal himself. He could save the merchant's life at the price of his own. That's what he'd told Arryn he was willing to do.
Adelson, please.
But how could Adelson rectify the situation? Adelson worked through people, and an honorable man would accept his own punishment to prevent someone from suffering in his place. There was a thud, followed by an ear-splitting howl, the second pike. Sweat drenched Emil's cheeks. It was time. 1 step into the open would save this man. His feet didn't budge. The merchant screamed. Emil's arms shook.
If they tortured the merchant to this degree, how much agony would they cause Emil?
Arryn wanted his money. Was Emil willing to betray Arryn and his friends? If not, was he willing to endure hours of torment? 1 step into the open would plunge his life into hell.
Adelson, I can't do this. Help me. I can't do this. Give me another way.
You know what you need to do. Emil's throat tightened. Was that Adelson's voice? Or his mind playing tricks on him? He hated when his mind played tricks.
Stupid. Why am I such an idiot?
Put the pike in the furnace, Arryn said. We need to escalate.
The merchant's pleas for mercy became unintelligible. Emil felt like screaming. 1 step. Living hell. By the 12, he couldn't bear pain for someone else. Even if the situation was his fault, he'd sneak into another cell after Arryn and his guards were finished and save whatever was left of the man from death.
I'm a wretch. I have absolutely no defense.
A blade sizzled. Emil stared at the ground. He didn't have enough strength to stop 5 men, nor the wit. Only enough cowardice to let the innocent suffer.
You'll die tonight,
Lord Arryn said.
Whether you tell the truth about the coins determines whether it's a slow, painful death or a quick death.
His hope of saving the man crumbled. Emil closed his eyes. Would he give himself up or flee? Emil's cheeks burned as he fled the dungeon.
So the merchant's still in the dungeon?
Arryn eased into a chair at his kitchen table.
All dead.
Emil refused to sit. He stared mindlessly at Arryn. The shadows flickering around his bearded face weren't as funny this time. For the second night in a row, Emil had returned to him to admit defeat. This time was worse. Arryn raised an eyebrow.
I thought you wouldn't let an innocent person die on your account.
I thought I knew who I was.
Emil swallowed.
I was wrong.
Orin's face softened.
I'm sorry. That's a heavy burden to carry. Especially for one as young as you look.
Emil glanced away.
I don't need reminded of my age.
Orin answered with his usual silence. Emil shook his head.
Orin won't even consider the possibility that the merchant was framed.
Orin shrugged.
Does he need to?
Shouldn't he want the truth?
He's the ruler. If he believes this merchant could be a culprit, it's his right to execute him.
Idiotic is what it is.
Do you see why I want to raise a revolution?
Why that topic?
I don't.
We could achieve so much with you, Emil.
Orin slapped his palm against the table. Passion seeped through his gravelly voice.
We could dispose this tyrant and set up a new society.
And how many more innocents would die because of it?
Emil dug his nails into his palm.
What if we fail?
Every exploit has risks.
I've already attempted one too many stunts.
Emil frowned at Orin.
That man wouldn't have been tortured if I hadn't waged this big theft. I should have turned myself in.
Orin shook his head.
And sacrifice all your potential for one merchant? You aren't responsible for Orin's stupidity.
I am responsible for my mistakes.
Dying for a merchant is insane.
Emil pursed his lips.
I never said I would do it.
But you...
I said I should.
Emil's voice broke, and he gripped the edge of the table tightly.
That doesn't mean I'm willing to do what's right. I'm not ready to be tortured and killed.
Help us launch a revolution to dispose this tyrant, Emil. And the merchant won't have to die in vain. Stop!
Emil's words dripped from his mouth. His jaw clenched.
I know what you want. And my answer. I'm leaving tonight.
You're what?
I've done enough damage here.
Orin scooted his chair away from the table and stood.
You don't get it, do you?
Don't get what?
You told me that you don't do great things because you'd rather do small deeds. I suspect that's not the real reason. You don't do great things because you're a coward. And your cockiness is a guise.
Emil avoided Orin's gaze.
Well, maybe I am. Everyone's born with a fault.
You could change.
If I really had courage, I wouldn't be joining your revolution.
Emil grabbed his satchel.
I'd be turning myself in. That's why I need to leave.
The sun rose behind Emil as he trudged down the road. The merchant was probably dead already. A pit remained at the bottom of his stomach, but he refused to look at the mountain and city behind him. He had made his decision and couldn't allow guilt to consume him. Even if he was imperfect, even if he was a coward, he could still do good things, couldn't he? Adelson couldn't be terribly angry with him as long as he used his powers to accomplish good. If only he could forget about the merchant.
So, Josiah, thank you for writing that book for us.
Oh, well, thanks for that awesome recording of that, Michael. That was a bunch of fun to listen to.
Yeah. The big thought with this podcast is to, yes, listen to the story and kind of get tangled in there and get to know some fun characters. And there's definitely some fun characters in this one. But first... primarily, We want to interview the authors and to get to know, okay, well, what went into the creative process of this particular work? Because I think a lot of times we get writing advice and different things that are very high level and broad reaching. But sometimes it's good to just hear, okay, well, what was the creative process for this particular thing? So this is kind of a chance to zoom in, like zoom way into all the way into a particular work and see what that creative process is. So if you would take us back to what sparked this idea for you.
Yeah, so there's a couple things that spark the initial idea of this story for me. One of the things, you know, that I, you know, and part of this has to do with my, you know, the process of how I craft my short stories, which bears similarities to my novels, but is a bit different. One of the things I generally find for my short stories is that my short stories often begin with a character. And that was the case with this story, is I knew I wanted to write a story about this character who is a shapeshifter, who just made it a routine to go from, you know, city to city across, you know, the continent he's on, just trying to do good things, you know, but, you know, trying to do small things to help others. And, you know, one of the things that I like to ask myself with short stories, since I've written a lot of short stories that are set in this world, and most of the short stories come from taking some character who's gotten into my head and, you know, to put it bluntly, you just think about how can I break this character by pointing to the, you know, either the obvious or the hidden flaw that's present within him. You know, so for a character, you know, like Emil in this story, how do you take this guy who seems like he has a rather good goal, and he just wants to go around and doing all these small good things, and how do you really take that and push that into a breaking point and show the lies the character hides behind and the flaws that exist along with his good motives. And that was, for me, where the gem of this story began, is it began with this character named Emil, who was a bit weird, a bit quirky, but just wanted to go around and just do good things but not cause any trouble, and think about, well, what happens when he really does cause a lot more trouble by his attempt to do what is right.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, and actually kind of bouncing off of that, Emil definitely leapt off the page for me immediately. And as I was looking back through it and listening again, you know, it was these weird little moments that, like, on reflection, I'm thinking, is that even feasible that he never wears shoes? Like, and, you know, doesn't it get cold? And I know he's wearing socks, but, like, your feet get wet. And so I'm just, like, sitting there thinking, but yet that one thing, these, like, random little details, and that one detail in particular for me kind of just made him come alive for some reason. So what was that like as far as pulling out this character?
Well, Emil is a very interesting character in that sense, because I would say, you know, I came into this story having some idea of who Emil was, that he's this guy who's kind of weird, quirky, all over the place. But, you know, in many ways, I discovered a lot of who he was and what he felt like during that first draft. You know, I forget with the, you know, and I think it was really, you know, writing those first couple paragraphs where I was, you know, writing him, you know, dropping down, you know, from the ceiling of this chapel, you know, and as he's doing so, I think the thought just struck me of, oh, well, he's going to drop down and he's not going to be, you know, not going to be wearing shoes. Well, why is he? And it was, you know, he was, you know, most of my characters aren't like this. Most of my characters, I have a, you know, I actually use the character questionnaire we have at our resource library at Story Embers and just go through that and develop them. But Emil is one of those characters that I really just learned who he was as I told the story, and learned he didn't wear shoes, and then a lot of other things about him as I went on writing the work.
That's awesome. So, like, in this particular case, you just had this, I mean, I guess that kind of leans into what you talked about at the beginning, that you had a character that you wanted to do something with that stuck with you and you needed to kind of get them out. Was that a big part of it? Were you ruminating on this character before you actually sat down to do the story?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, part of my motive for doing this story is he's a character that, you know, I want to write a longer novella or novel series set in this world. I haven't quite decided yet. And he's one of the characters I wanted to be a part of that. So part of this was, well, if I'm going to write, you know, a series where he's, you know, not the protagonist, but a, you know, sizable character in it, I want to get into his shoes, particularly from his perspective, and learn, you know, what motivates him, how does he think inside his head, and discover him that way. So I'd been ruminating on who he was as a person and what kind of traits he'd have, you know, before I, you know, sat down in my computer, pulled up Scrivener, and started writing that first sentence.
Gotcha. That's actually extremely encouraging to hear that he's potentially coming back, just because it just feels like, man, I know I learned the lesson as a reader, but man, I wish he could learn it too.
Yeah, some stories I write and the protagonist doesn't learn anything, and I'm like, yeah, you didn't learn anything. You kind of had it coming to you. You know, Emil is one of those characters that, you know, even as the author, I'm like, you've got so much going well. It's just, you know, it's just the courage, you know, as Lewis put it, the every virtue at the testing point where so many of us fall short, and you know, I don't know. As an author, I feel, you know, you look at him on the one hand, he's like, yeah, he's doing something terrible. On the other hand, you feel for him, because how many times, you know, do we want to do the right thing and yet lack the gumption to actually take that step despite all of our talk?
Yeah. Well, and that's so interesting too, that Oren ends up kind of speaking what we're all thinking, but yet he even comes at it from an angle that we may not agree with as well, as far as like, it's so interesting to see the characters having like, oh, well, I agree with Emil on this, but I kind of agree with Oren on this. And what was that like as far as having just the few, like Oren's really the only other pretty well-developed character in this. Was that pretty intentional did you have some development with him as well?
You know, I'm trying to think back, because I wrote this short story about a year and a half ago. And remember what I, you know, I have a more clear memory of Emil than I did with, you know, with Oren. To put it, you know, rather bluntly, but, you know, that's what we're doing. We're trying to unpeel, you know, the scenes of what put this story together. You know, originally part of the purpose of him is, you know, Emil needs someone to bounce off of, right? It can't just be about Emil going around and doing things. He needs someone to bounce off of, you know, and I also wanted someone to challenge Emil and to really put it in place, you know, the two different, you know, sides that are being presented here. You know, kind of the stereotypical revolutionary who's just like, well, we just need to do all these big things, bring about societal change, everything will get better. You know, and the other position that says, you know, we don't really need big dramatic change. We just need, you know, it's just about the small acts that we individually do, because you can't change the system. Part of the reason why I was thinking about that as writing this story is because this is, you know, a debate that I have to think about and that I've heard both sides on. And when I was thinking through, you know, if this is a story about Emil, you know, grappling with is his, you know, or, well, you know, not coming to many conclusions over, but being forced to reckon with, is there an issue with, you know, just living, you know, your life, just trying to do the small things, not touching the bigger picture, you know, I needed another character who could, you know, present some other option, you know, whether the right one or the wrong one. And you know, to some extent, Oren, you know, because I didn't plan on him as much, kind of leapt off the page like Emil did, of who does he, you know, he's sitting down at this table. And it took me a couple drafts to get Oren. Oren was not someone in my first draft, you know, Oren would, you know, felt a bit flat, was a bit wooden, until I went through and gave him more, you know, mostly more personality. Because in the first draft, I knew kind of what worldview he believed, but, you know, if he's just a worldview, he's just going to feel like just, a talking point.
Okay. Well, what were some things you remember doing for Oren in particular?
There's a couple things that I did for Orton. One was just figure out what does the guy look like? You know, how is he built? What does he sound like? Because for me, there's a lot of the character's personality that just comes from what they look like. You know, and I think this is something that's rubbed off on me from reading a lot of Dickens. Because if you read Dickens' descriptions, you can tell a lot by someone just how Dickens describes them. And I find that especially for minor characters, when you don't have a bunch of time to show us their personality, we're relying on, you know, assumptions a reader is going to make based on how you describe someone is a very quick way to immediately try to, you know, give them some color and give them some personality as a character. So part of it came from just trying to imagine what he looks like, what's his occupation, and playing some on some different assumptions that readers might have along that to be able to do, you know, to be able to fill in the space I just didn't have with the word count you have for a short story. Other half actually came from just thinking about him not just as a character, but as, you know, as a father and as a husband. And thinking about, you know, as an author, I'm only thinking about his relationship with Emil. He's not going to feel real for me because he's just there with Emil. And when I thought about, well, what's his relationship with his wife like? What's his relationship with his children like? What's he like as a husband? What's he like as a father? What's he like in relation to other people? You know, even though those other people aren't going to show up in major ways in that story, that also helped me to just understand who he was by gaining some idea of what may he be like when, the readers aren't here and aren't watching what he's doing.
Gotcha. That's awesome. So kind of shifting gears, you mentioned Orin was a little bit trickier for you. But what was the hardest part of getting this story from start to finish?
You know, I'd say that a lot of the challenge of this story for me was figuring out how do I force Emil to grapple with what I want him to grapple with in a way that doesn't seem really contrived. Because when I started, you know, writing the story, I knew that where I wanted it to end. It ended with someone else is being caught, and Emil, you know, feels like he ought to give himself up, but he's not going to do so, right? And so the question is, how do I arrange all those things in place so that, you know, after the first scene, which came rather easily for me, after where he's, you know, accidentally, you know, made himself look like someone else, how do I get that he knows the other person was captured, he figures out where they are, and he gets there without it, you know, seeming too much like a connect the dots mystery of, you know, you go here and then you go there. And you know, when I was first writing the story, I actually took, you know, the two places where, you know, I paused, you know, the most before continued writing was right before the market scene and then right before the scene where he goes back into the palace. Now, part of the challenge of the scene back into the palace is I was trying to avoid it feeling repetitive, like, oh, we've already seen him sneak into the palace before. So that was part of the challenge I was trying to think through on that front. But part of it with the market scene is just thinking about, you know, I don't want it to seem overly convenient for Emil because the story is not going to work if it feels like he's just being railroaded there. And so, you know, even though as the author, I know where he's going to go, I'm going to take him there to think about, well, what natural actions could he take? And what could be true about the environment that feels natural, that feels realistic, that's nonetheless going to get him where I want him to go without feeling like he's just being shunted off from one plot point to the next, but they're actually happening by his own choices.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Well, it definitely, at least to me, I would not have guessed that those were the parts that struggled, because especially the market scene really popped for me, I guess, again, because of the bare feet thing coming out as a point. It's just, it's like, man, this just seems so impractical, but so much him. Like, I feel like I know him.
Yeah.
By the end of the story, you've brought up some pretty thought-provoking stuff. So Emil really grapples with this hard choice and its consequences. And actually, this kind of fresh on the heels of the character summit, and this was some of the topics there, but what was that like for you to explore that topic and theme as you wrote along, just knowing that, you know, we can only make our characters as deep and to go as far as we're willing to go?
Yeah, well, I mean, in large part, I'd say, you know, especially with the short stories that I write, you know, most of the short stories I write stem from me trying to grapple through some issue. And, you know, because I'm me, I like grappling through an issue with putting, you know, crazy characters in the fantasy environment and seeing, you know, what they do in, you know, in some of these different, you know, extreme situations. Because sometimes I think it's through thinking about it in, you know, virtue and extreme situations that we really understand what it looks like to live in, you know, in the day-to-day life. And so, you know, like I alluded to before, you know, the question of, you know, you live in a corrupt society and, you know, this is just Emil who has this problem, right? All, you know, everyone listening, you know, unless you're somewhere I've never heard of before, in which case, you know, send me an email, love to join you where you're at. You know, all of us have to deal with living in a corrupt society. And we all have to wrestle with, well, to what extent do I just, you know, stay low, you know, mind my business, but just do small good things that improve people in the real life, you know, and when, and, you know, to what extent should we be, you know, the revolutionaries who are trying to shake things up and, you know, bring across some kind of change, whether that's, you know, change across a whole country or change in a school or change in, you know, a group of friends, right? We all need to wrestle with, you know, do I just, you know, keep my head down, do good where I am, or do I try to change larger situations? And, you know, to some extent, you know, and so that was one of the things that this story is grappling with, you know, and, you know, does the story pose any answers? Well, maybe, maybe not. I don't really like talking about what themes I may be intending with the stories, but I, you know, say that in terms of the situation, that's one of the things that, you know, you know, I'm grappling with, so I want to see other characters like Emil, you know, like Orin in this story, also grappling with the same thing. So I'd say in large part, the thematic struggle of this story comes through my own, you know, questionings and trying to work out, you know, what I think about questions that lack easy answers.
Well, Josiah, this has been very informative to me. I hope it is for the rest of those listening. Just thinking through being able to dive deep into something like this and then to hear your process in going through it. Just appreciate you so much being willing to take the time. I thought maybe a bonus question, and if you don't have an answer to it, it won't be a bonus question. But are any of the characters based on real people in your life?
Yeah. In some way, yes, in some way, no. So I'd say, you know, specifically with Emil, in some ways, I'd say Emil is, you know, my own, is, you know, when I sat down and wrote Emil, I wasn't consciously thinking of, I'm going to base it off this person in my life. On the other hand, if you looked back at teenage me and the friends that teenage me had, the type of weird, out there quirkiness, there is a good part of that somewhat consciously, you know, stems from my own very weird sense of humor that I don't normally let out, but kind of, you know, that, you know, since my high school years, I've learned to, you know, keep a bit more of a control on that. I kind of allowed to go free in a meal. So yes and no, depending on how you want to put it.
That was a twist. I would not have thought that you based that character on some version of yourself.
Weird, high school me who is still homeschooled, wasn't out into the real world yet. Still, I have a unique sense of humor that I often weirds people out. So I let it loose only in small chunks, or sometimes I give it all to my characters.
So then did you often go around barefoot for long periods of time?
No, that's Emil. I will put that solely on Emil's at Emil's feet to explain why he does that.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. Thanks so much, Josiah.
Yep. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you so much for listening. This is something new that we are trying at Story Embers, so once again, we greatly envy your feedback. If you would send an email to info@storyembers.org, you can give us your feedback as well as any ideas or comments for future episodes, and then also be on the lookout for another story coming your way in the coming weeks. Thank you so much.
So by the end of this story, you've grappled with some, or you've grappled with some pretty grappled. Let me just re-say that.
Sure.
I may edit this out, and it can be in the bloopers.